Hey, it's me, Olga Kaul, and this is Upfront, the bold, frank podcast created for the financial services industry and anyone else that's interested in it. You know, as far as industries go, you're kind of cool. You literally make the world go round. People come to you for help to make their wishes and dreams come true. That makes you like some sort of modern-day fairy godmother, and we all need one of those. So why does the thought of financial services leave a lot of us feeling cold? How can we get people to fall in love with financial services? That's what I'm here to find out. Throughout the series, I'll be talking to forward thinkers from inside and outside of the industry about what's getting in the way of people having a better relationship with their finances and financial services, as well as finding the answers to help financial services businesses find that spark. I think you'll have strong views on this. Tell me about them. Send me a voice note or drop me a line at upfront@irs.com. And don't forget to subscribe and follow Upfront wherever you listen to your podcasts, so you don't miss any of this. I start every episode by asking an upfront question. Today, I want to know how financial services can be more accessible to everyone. By this, I mean, is the language you're using accessible? Or are you expecting your customers to use a dictionary to decode their investment advice? Or even a PhD to understand their pension plans and super statements? When it comes to financial services, should I really have to read everything about 5 times before it makes sense? How do we solve that? I'm joined by Julia Newbold, editor of Money Magazine Australia, and Charlie Corbett, director of the Plain Speaking Institute. Both are on a mission to make financial services easier for everyone to understand and have some advice to help the industry do that. So let's get straight to it. Julia, how can financial services be more accessible to everyone?
I think it should try by speaking to clients and getting to the customer. That's number one. They all talk about putting the client, the customer, in the center of everything they do. And yet by the time they have all these meetings and brainstorms and whatever to sell whatever the products are, the customer's way behind.
Language is a big problem, as we know, in this sector. I don't think there's enough effort to relate directly to people's experiences with finance and the importance of finance in their life.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about wealth management and wealth creation and wealth this and wealth that. Nobody talks like that. You know, someone doesn't connect with someone saying that. They connect with, can you afford to send your kids to private schools? Can you buy that car? Can you quit work? Whatever it is.
I think with financial services, it's a prisoner of its own vague generalities. You know, it's marketing speak, and everybody's got an innovative fund with a long-term sustainable returns and all this kind of thing, but it doesn't have any meaning. You know, name a company or a fund manager that doesn't describe itself as innovative. You know, everyone's innovative, and if everyone's innovative, no one's innovative. Mm-hmm. So people switch off.
Yeah, I love the idea of going into an industry and they're just a predetermined language. The way I think you go into academia and all of a sudden everything has to be heretofore, henceforth in every essay. The question that comes here is, how do we motivate financial services industries to use simplified language the way that we very successfully educated people with eating 5 a day to stay healthy or slip, slop, slap to avoid sun damage?
Well, it's very open to disruption. You know, the first company that can do it successfully, that can really connect with whatever group they're trying to connect with, they will come out on top. If it's a group that wants to connect with women or people of a certain income or an industry, whoever gets there first will be able to profit from that. And then the others will all follow.
Anyone who works back from the basic fundamental needs of our lives and, you know, solves those problems in a way that's human and normal. My son asked me to fix his bike. I'll say, you know, I'll fix your bike. But as soon as I go into the office, on goes the nonsense hat. And it's not fixing the bike. It's an ongoing sustainable bike solution with it. You know, my innovative insight into it. I'll just fix your bike. I mean, it's this ridiculous enhanced bicycle experience. You know, all this sort of nonsense. We're lost in it. As Julia said, it just takes one business to cut through that and get to the point.
According to free trade research, 88% of British adults don't have confidence in their own financial literacy. And it's not just the Brits. A study by the University of Melbourne found half of all Australians struggle with it too. What are your thoughts on this? And do you think that there's an untapped market there for financial services industries?
There's definitely an untapped market there. You know, there's over 50% in both markets. It's that communication to understand what people want. You know, if you go and see a financial advisor, you want them to listen to your needs and then respond, not try and promote something that they think is important because you've lost the connection straight away. And as Charlie says, there's some sort of guilt that's connected with money and finance, and people don't want to ask the questions and they feel embarrassed that they don't know the answers.
Oh God, the amount of acronyms. At some point, it was too late to ask what an ISA was. I've come to terms with the fact that I'll never find out. That's fine.
No, but it's so true though, because you're frightened to ask. And so we never ask what an ISA is. We never ask the basic question. So that means we just switch off. As soon as your brain reads a word it doesn't understand or sees too many acronyms, your brain just switches off anyway. It's just not relevant to people, even though that it is relevant, really fiercely relevant to everyday life.
As I scroll through the savings account of my bank, I was like, 0% APR, that looks low. I don't know what that is, but it looks, for a percentage, it sounds pretty low. So can you recall the last experience you had where you personally could make sense of some financial jargon?
Most days, you know, I've been in this business 20 years covering capital markets, financial markets, all of that. Most days I'll read something that I have to read three times to get to the bottom of. And it's not just that I don't understand the words or anything like that. It's because the person who's writing it probably doesn't understand it. And so they've just used all the words that they hear and they put them all together.
It's a bit like the emperor's got no clothes. You know, you don't want to admit that you're the one who sees that he's naked, but we all kind of know, but we're just that bit afraid. We think maybe there's something we're missing, but probably not. I always feel that when you're trying to explain concepts, you've got to be able to explain it to, you know, the people in your house, no matter how old or young they are or what kind of educational background they've got, because they're real people.
I think it's also interesting how maybe there's a perception that there's a legacy of all of this language and that like the new disruptors and the startups aren't partaking in this culture. But then when you think about crypto, everything's an acronym yet again.
Oh, yeah.
And would you invest in it like because of that?
Yeah, well.
But there's clearly a culture of overcomplicating things that isn't necessarily being challenged by newcomers, or is it?
I defy anyone who owns a Bitcoin to tell me how blockchain works, because I don't bloody know.
When you talk about legacy, there's the legacy of the disclaimers that you've got to put on everything, and you've got to, you know, make sure that someone's not going to take it the wrong way and they've read this and they know all the things. And that complicates it even further. And it makes people afraid to just say things simply.
Who's ever read the T's and C's? Goodness knows what Apple can do to me. I've never read those enormously. Just like, oh, God, yes, 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 tick, 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 tick. One day someone's going to come and just take my house away. It's like you said you could in the terms and conditions of your iPhone. And that's the other thing about it. You know, this communication is long, dense emails or long, dense explanations, you know, not clearly spaced out, clearly written, short paragraphs, short sentences, simple language, real meaning. There's one, I must read it out to you because I use it in my course, one of my favorites. This is from a big wealth manager. And this is their strapline. Using innovation, strategy, and design, we turn opportunities into solutions that deliver a return on investment for our clients and create outstanding experiences for their customers. Sounds like a theme park. There's no meaning there. And you all, by the way, switched off for innovative. You could go to any website, any company, and you'll read similar stuff. It's not related to Julia's life, my life, your life. It's just gobbledygook.
And I think it's also the product of when too many people have worked on something. You know, with some of these disruptors, they're lean, they can just say what they want. They're not having 100 people have to approve everything that goes through. They haven't sent it through all the legal channels that maybe a larger established organization has done. And therefore, they can express things more clearly.
It's so true. My book was born out of frustration because I'd left being a journalist and I thought, I'll go into companies, I'll teach them how to communicate with the world, to write in a way that's pithy and interesting and engaging. And I went into these fund managers, you know, with this grand plans. And I'd write some article or blog for the fund manager or a CEO, whoever it was, or some marketing material that I felt was clean copy, as they say, and got to the point. And they say, oh, we love it. It's great. Oh, well, refreshing. We'll just show some stakeholders. Who? Stakeholders. Oh, right. Okay. Going to stakeholders now. And then three or four people, they'd add a bit. You've got to say this too. We've got to say that. No, but it's marketing. You're just teasing people. No, you must say we're this. You must say we're innovative. You must say we're sustainable. And we must be that. And then you'll get back this monster. And then they go, oh, it's got to go through compliance. So then it goes into legal and compliance. And what you get back is a monster. And there's nothing anyone can do because the machine says this stakeholder must see it. And no one in business wants to take a risk or you know, especially in big companies, you know, no one kind of wants to take the... Oh, is there music coming on? Is that me?
OMG, there's the sound of love again. I want you both to close your eyes and think about something that makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside. Open your heart and put the issues aside for a minute. and talk to me about what you love about financial services. Julia, is there anything you'd like to share that you love about the financial services industry?
Look, there's a lot of things I love about it, and I love the fact that actually it can help people. Financial services companies can really help people achieve goals because it can help you put your money into something hardworking and achieve your retirement when you want. There's a lot of financial planners who do a really great job of helping you mitigate risks in your life, to budget better and, you know, to be in a better place. Like, a lot of people just don't understand the simple concepts of budgeting and saving and so on. So I think there's some great things that financial services can achieve for people.
Financial services is actually so innate, it is part of us. Everything we do, it underpins and has done since mankind invented the wheel. It is so fundamentalized. And the reason I like it, in a way, is because people don't realize, and I love being able to explain its relevance to people, or to take complex ideas and simplify them, make them easily understandable for people. And this idea that, you know, the butterfly changes interest rates in Washington and there's a financial tsunami over in Asia. Everything matters and it underpins all politics, all our everyday lives, supply and demand. It'll never go away. And yet, because it's financial services, it just feels like, oh, that's something other people do.
Just those basic concepts of you can borrow money and achieve things today that you couldn't otherwise have. Or someone's there who can invest for you, who can put money into things that will make you more money that you probably couldn't choose yourself. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. But I think it's what Charlie says, that it's very separate. It's called financial services. It's like this over there concept. A couple of years ago when I wrote The Joy of Money, that was about the idea that it's actually part of your life. It's not something discrete. You've got to establish that money is what you need to do whatever it is in your life you want to do. Any changes you want to make, whether it's jobs, relationships, location, you've got to figure out, can I afford it? If not, how can I afford it in the future?
You might do economics at school, you might do business studies. You're never taught the basics. It should be maths, English, et cetera, but also there should be personal finance. Even that makes me want to fall asleep, personal finance. Oh, God. As humans, we just don't want to think about the difficult stuff. And if there was a way of dressing up, if we were more inculcated from a younger age in how this all works, then maybe that would help. But I don't know, I've got two sons now. If I sat down with my seven-year-old and started talking about personal finance, I know exactly what he'd do.
But I think there's basic concepts, Charlie, that you can start straight away. You know, the idea of spending less than you earn, for example, or delayed gratification, or just the idea that if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. You know, just those would really help people immensely.
Exactly.
We all have some kind of relationship with financial services, regardless of whether we work in them or don't. So I want to get into your relationship with it. What's the one thing you want financial services to break up with for good?
Well, I think dump the jargon, and I think also dump this constant barrage of cross-selling. Think about what people want and try and help them reach whatever goal it is that they have, whether it's car, pension, house. You know, when you walk into a bank, they're always going to be trying to flog you something. It is quite exhausting, and it does erode people's trust. Because all financial services are ultimately a means for us to get stuff. It's wonderful financial, you know, it's great. The company, the individual is the heart of everything. And we can go out and we can borrow money to realize our dreams. Or if you're a company, you can sell a bit of equity and someone else will find you to do that. You can raise money. That's what it allows us to do.
You have to drop the jargon. And I think when, you know, some piece of marketing material goes out, if a real person could just have a read and say, I don't get this, that would be really helpful. And they'd have to then go back and put it in plain speak so that actually it would help the consumer, but it would also help the companies.
If I've learned anything so far is that I think the financial services industry is in the pocket of Big Thesaurus, and we've revealed that. It's clear that there is obviously a market and a space for people to look for financial advice. And I'm very curious to know what both of you think about people getting financial advice on Twitter and Facebook and from influencers on TikTok.
Well, I think it's good to have more information out there and to have people actually talking about finance. That's a good thing. And for some of the influencers and the Facebook groups and so on that I followed, you also get really good information by the other people in those groups and some of the things that they've struggled with and what they've learnt and who's helped them and so on. So, you know, while it's started by a finfluencer or someone else, it gets sort of taken over, but it's not always correct. And as Charlie says, you need to do a bit of your own research, but just to have that conversation out there and maybe then you learn who you can trust and so on. But it's also a bit of an unregulated area at the moment. So that's a warning as well.
Yeah, I think it's great. I don't know if you have Mumsnet in Australia, but it's sort of Mumsnet for finance. There's nothing wrong with that because it's reassuring. And there will be people who'll explain it in words of one syllable and it will break down the barriers. But as you say, it's not regulated, so you've got to be a bit careful.
But also, I think if anything proves that the financial services industry can't stop using jargon is the word finfluencer.
Yes, it's terrible, and I'm sorry to have used it.
No. I mean, I'm sure they call themselves that. Also, I think, especially in the peak of the pandemic, there was a lot of people on the internet trying to sell these sort of get-rich-quick schemes, especially these YouTube videos that were like, this is how I made $1 million. And it's like, if you had $1 million, you'd just be enjoying it. You wouldn't be making YouTube videos about it.
Just generally editing Money Magazine in Australia, we had a lot of people just seeking financial information during the pandemic, just worried about how they could save what they had, how they would manage if they lost work. It really increased our readership, to be honest. And I think it's kind of stayed that way. People are a lot more engaged with their finances now.
Is it frowned upon when plain language is used in the financial services space by other financial services experts? Because obviously audiences love it.
If you write something that's short and pithy and gets to the point, it's almost like, oh, that's not worthy. If you write a huge, long email, you know, it's suddenly, it's sort of seemed to be more worthy, which is a nightmare if your job is actually make everything shorter and cleaner. And actually, it's much harder, as Mark Twain said, you know, I'm sorry I wrote you such a long letter. I didn't have time to write a short one. It is harder to be concise. And yet, there's this idea that if you waffle on and you use the long words, especially in meetings, and you sound very clever, that's somehow more intelligent and worthy, when actually the opposite is the case. People hide behind this language.
Charlie, you have a list of banned words. Can you share the history of banned words and tell us why you made it?
I just got fed up. I started a blog on LinkedIn with these words, with a little bit of blurb. People were quite enjoying them. Somebody said there's probably a book in that. So I have this sort of quadrant of shame that I put up. I mean, I've got a whole glossary in my book at the back of banned words. But
oh, wow.
But what's fascinating about these words, and it's not just, you know, obviously don't use acronyms, obviously, you know, spell stuff out, be simple and clear. But there are a lot of words like, why do people utilize, you know, or just say use, you know, why do we will utilize that resource? You know, what does that actually mean? We'll use that or we'll facilitate something. Sustainable's banned, dynamic's banned, you know, name a job applicant who isn't dynamic. And I was writing it down and I thought, oh, sustainable, dynamic, stakeholder solutions. That sounds like something you might read. Or we'll utilize current resource space. Or, you know, innovative, unique global insight, facilitate significant ongoing disruption. You know, ongoing's a classic, but I can't keep up with it. I love reaching out, circling back, taking a deep dive and then running up flagpoles. That's fun too.
I'm having flashbacks to my office job in such a big way right now.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
It's just depressing. Why do we have to speak like this? Why the nonsense, Hat? We don't use good, crisp, sharp verbs. It's always enhancing things or it's empowering. Everyone's being empowered all the time. And the problem is there's nothing wrong with these words, but they're used so often that they become meaningless. And I have, yes, many more words I ban, especially when they turn nouns into verbs. That drives me mad.
Ultimately, what we're trying to do here is disrupt the financial services space.
But if you get speaking like this, because you're talking about financial services, you thought, I'll just add space on the end of that. Or just financial services. It's a classic. It's a classic. But we don't realize we're doing it because we're surrounded by it so much.
So, as we enter the last segment of the podcast, we'll be discussing what one piece of advice does the industry need to hear. So, Julia, to summarize, what needs to change for financial services to be more accessible to everyone?
The industry really has to look at the customer and figure out what it is they want. Stop trying to push and try and get the customer to come to them because they've got something that the customer wants.
Speak like a human being. Speak like you're explaining it to your granny or you're always talk to people with everything you write like they're an intelligent friend. My first rule, I have 5 rules of good writing in my course. And the number one rule is know your reader. Think about your reader, but not in a way that is, you know, these ridiculous marketing segments. Oh, it's a millennial. I'll talk to them like this. Think of them as human being who got up that morning, spilt the coffee, really stressed out. Don't send them an email in the first thing, you know, wait for them to go through their other mails. You know, think about them in those terms as we're all just big babies. We need reassurance. We fear for the future. We love a laugh. Try and hit those buttons rather than just spew out words.
I do find it very interesting how our default to the most simplified explanation is explain it to your granny. It's like, what if your granny was a rocket scientist? Your granny lived through the war. She knows more about life than you do.
That's a fair point, actually. Poor granny gets a bad rap. She's not. That's why I say intelligent friend. Intelligent friend. But if you imagine an individual, that's why I say imagine an individual. When I do my writing, I imagine my wife, who's my biggest critic, but also, you know, that's my audience. She's a good example of an audience. Terry Wogan was a UK radio journalist, had 5 million listeners every morning. He had a lovely Irish lilt, which helps. But he used to say, I have one listener and I speak to that listener and that's what I do. And that makes it feel like he's talking to you directly. And that's the key to good writing. And that's the key if financial services really want to, as Julia said, not teams of people doing it, one person speaking to one person. And that's in a way that is human with the cadences. You know, write as you speak. I'm explaining this to you in words of one syllable. And it's really important rather than this abstract way of speaking to an abstract audience, a big homogenous lump of stakeholders.
Sounds delicious.
I often think of my mum because she's a really harsh critic. And if I can sell an idea to my mum and explain it to her in a way that she asks, oh, and then what? And asks me questions about it, I think I've won. But she's a hard critic, so, you know, I don't always win.
But it also shows you understand it really clearly when she's got through to mum. You know, that's when you know.
Yeah, it's the so what.
Yeah, exactly. The so what.
Both of those words are very accessible.
I believe that. I believe very strongly in financial services and what they can do for people and improve people's lives. But a little less selling and a little more talking. I was getting a little more conversation. I thought, Elvis. Anyway.
I want to thank Julia Newbold and Charlie Corbett for all of that real talk. And you know what? I want to thank you for listening. If you want to know more about Charlie, Julia, and plain language, check out the podcast notes for a link to the Upfront blog with more on all of that, including Charlie's Quadrant of Shame. And if acronyms like ISA and APR make you go WTF, tell me about it. Drop me a voice note or write to me at upfront@irez.com. Make sure you subscribe and follow Upfront wherever you listen to your podcast so you don't miss new episodes. Next time, oh, this is going to be fun, I'm asking if the financial services experience sucks.